Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews of people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Getting under the skin of a city like Birmingham isn't something you can do overnight, although that was how Ben Waddington and a group of friends began their quest some 10 years ago. It was almost by accident that Ben became a guide to the hidden, overlooked, or secret parts of the city. He was trying to help people out in finding out about forgotten characters in Birmingham's cultural and industrial past. Ben quickly recognised that he couldn't be an expert in all things Birmingham, and has since set up to help others reveal what is under the city's skin by setting up the Still Walking Festival and supporting local people to tell their stories.
So let's start. Tell us about the Still Walking Festival.
I can go through some of the earliest moments from when it turned into beyond just doing guided tours, if you like.
And they were originally, they were tours that you did yourself?
Yes, they were. So about 10 years ago, I used to go around with friends in the evening at night every full moon. I think it was something to do with like claiming back nighttime walking as not being, rather than regard the park as having a nighttime curfew, we actually embraced the fact that we could go to these public places at night. We did choose full moons to do that on, and we'd just find some grassy or intriguing area to go out in the evening, usually during winter, but any full moon. And that was our earliest efforts to create a group guided walk of a private sort. It was my turn to determine where to go one year, I think that was 2006. And I thought, well, rather than just go to some remote bit of woodland or something, I'll actually do a city centre one. Why not? Why can't we do one in the city? Because it was related to the full moon as a, you know, regular means for us to remember when we were going. We put it in our diary. I did a Lunar Society industrial history walk in Birmingham, which related to some of these spots from the lives of the Lunar Society. The Lunar Society were a group of friends in the 18th century in Soho near Birmingham, who'd meet up and talk about scientific and industrial and commercial matters of the day. So I was celebrating that history. And I did that and really enjoyed it. I remember being quite nervous at first, even though these were my friends. And I wrote all my little facts on cards, got all the dates in the right order, and did that. And it was a lot of fun. It took forever to do it. It took about 3 hours to do. So I learnt very early on how these things can kind of escalate. But what I do remember most of all from that walk is just how fun it was to do. And at the time I was working in Central Library in the arts department of the Reference Library in Birmingham. And I told my colleagues at work that I was doing these walks, these lunar walks, full moon walks, and described the history walk I'd done. And we got an inquiry that afternoon from somebody who was saying, well, is there anyone in the city who can do me a guided tour, create a guided tour relating to a Birmingham printer? And so my name came up just because I'd done this very unofficial friends-only event the previous night. And sometimes it's better to say yes to these things than to say no, that's not really something I do, just to see where it will end up. So I did say yes and created a guided tour about printer and typographer John Baskerville, another 18th century industrial figure from Birmingham. So that was my introduction to doing guided tours at all. I thought it was quite fun, you know, quite like the immediacy of the whole thing. You know, I've done presentations or lectures before, and you get a lot of students or just whoever's in the audience, you don't know whether they're really listening. You get some really difficult questions at the end from somebody who's got another agenda. If I can avoid doing presentations, I will. But the guided tour seemed to be, first of all, it wasn't apparent whether it was a social thing, an entertainment thing, whether it was about delivering information to people or whether it was supposed to be, you know, a little bit more fun than that, whether you should include jokes, how much research you should do of your own, and with what degree of authenticity, you know, the audience should ascribe to what it is that you're delivering. So I was intrigued by all of those things and thought, well, I want to do more. I'd like to do some more guided tours.
What elements of doing it were the ones that thought, wow, this is actually, I found something I'm getting more of a kick out of than you thought you were going to?
One great thing is just for people to buy a ticket to listen to you or to care about what you think. So that nearly never happens in our life, really, that someone's paying to listen to you. Usually it's hard to get a word in edgeways in a lot of audiences. So to turn the tables at all like that was surely one element, you know, by no means the only. When I realised that not only did I have, you know, the attention of people, that it was this concentration of people who were there, that they weren't just a random selection of people, they weren't just rolling up and buying a ticket on the off chance. They cared about the subjects, they cared about the, you know, the spaces that we'd be going to. And presumably they had some prior, you know, if not knowledge, then reason for being involved at all. You know, even if that's just their interest in local history, just interest in their local environment even. And to get a rare assembly of people like that is actually quite a significant thing to arrange. You would never advertise a guided tour, I think, as being, you know, you would say, oh, this is the subject. The subject today is trees. We were talking about trees. Meet here. It's a fiver or a ten or whatever the ticket is. Don't be late. Let us know if you're not coming. All those kind of things. But you would never, as a marketing promotional element, you almost never say a great opportunity to be in the company of other people who also care about acorns and seeds and the rest of it, the seasons, because that's not a draw. Well, I felt it should be, you know, I felt that it certainly was an intriguing aspect. And so after doing a few walks at all and sort of getting comfortable with what it was that I actually wanted to do, I realised that I shouldn't present myself as an expert or an authority at all. Merely leading the walk shouldn't necessarily mean, you know, authority in the subject. And when I kind of realised that the heat was off a little bit, I included the audience a little bit more, the group rather, and straightforward explained that, you know, the reason that we were doing the tour was because I was interested in this subject. I'd seen all these particular instances of whatever the subject was, and I felt it was worth me sharing them with people who seemingly cared about that subject too. And that, you know, guided tours are relatively rare in that sense. So I felt that being honest about what the conditions were would mean that people would be more likely to chip in if they felt they knew something, so they could perhaps correct something or offer their own opinion or their own observation as well. You know, just seeing stuff that you hadn't seen, I thought was an intriguing aspect. And so I did that for a couple of years, creating like an annual program of weekend walks. I was sort of racking my brains for more themes to include. What else can I talk about? I've done architecture, I've done public art, I've done all the things I actually am interested in. And I thought, well, if I'm going to extend it into other areas, maybe the thing to do is not lead the walk myself. So rather than try, so if you were to do a tree walk, maybe you would have to learn, you'd have to wander around, identify a lot of trees, understand their lives, how they're treated in different public spaces, perhaps interview tree wardens whose job it is to, you know, understand the whole tree realm. It occurred to me that it would be a lot easier just to get that tree warden to do the walk and for me to support their efforts, you know. So it occurred to me that it would be easier to teach someone to be a tour guide for the afternoon than it would be for me as a tour guide to learn all about trees.
Sounds very canny to me.
Yeah, a critical moment in the genesis of the festival itself. And so when I realised that, I stopped doing, you know, there's certainly a lot less research being done. And I, you know, it also occurred to me that if I got a lot out of doing these events and reaching people that I'd never met before, and making connections, you know, it's almost like doing a little mini conference, really, that someone else working professionally, well, they could too, you know, they could either bolster their presentation, public speaking skills, sharpen what they'd already got, or, you know, kind of adapt what they already understood in their subject amongst their professional colleagues to the public, you know, ideally anyway, that they would be able to rethink their subject to be able to portray it quickly and easily to just ordinary people, really, or just to any audience without knowing who they were. And so there are all these kind of reasons for actually creating a program. As much as I enjoy seeing varied walking programs, it really felt that there's a lot of other people who could benefit from it as well. The other thing is, it was really cheap to do, really cheap to organize.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to ask, because, I mean, A, you know, organizing anything takes time, effort, and often some money, or at least the time you give up is an opportunity lost elsewhere.
Yes.
So, what I remember from your own efforts was that you were one of the early users of crowdfunding. So how quickly did you get to a point where you suddenly thought, well, actually, let's see whether we can raise some funding from the people who might actually genuinely be interested in being involved?
The first festival I did, the first program of events that I did, which was in 2012, for Still Walking, which is to say I wasn't leading any of the events.
Oh, you chose not to lead any at all?
I ended up doing one or two because other people had dropped out.
Okay.
Early on, I realised that it would just look a little bit strange for the director of that festival to also appear in their own programme regularly. So I thought, well, I'll just make two separate businesses of that. One is the festival, and then if the festival attracts any attention or generates any interest, then people will surely get in touch with me to create something for their project, which is what happened. But that I wanted to keep those two things separate. And the other thing that prompted that was it is a busy time, and the last thing you want to be thinking about is last minute kind of research for your walk. It's just a lot easier if all of that isn't something you have to worry about. So it seemed like a very natural thing to allow other people to do all the actual walking work and for me to oversee, the various organisations.
What time of year does the Still Walking Festival take place?
It's different times of the year. We've done things as early in the year as March, mid-March, when it's just becoming a little bit spring-like, and as late as mid-September, and either side of those dates just feels like it would be risky to program something, you know, weather-wise, that is.
So you're fairly relaxed, you're not sort of trying to stamp your mark that the first week in May is still festival week.
No, there's many variables in how these things all come together. One is, you know, just when I've got enough material, enough possible events to string together and call it a program, then it just feels like, yeah, just get on with it. No need to sit on this forever. Just put it out there. That's a sort of semi-random kind of timing. But I also kind of quite like the idea of not being predictable in that sense, not being part of an established calendar. Even though I call it a festival, you know, I want to demonstrate that I am celebrating the city and what you can do in the city with a very sort of low impact kind of approach. So it is a celebration. Festival, perhaps it isn't a festival, perhaps festival is a little too ambitious, or maybe the future of the project is something more like a festival.
Well, no, I think it's great to aspire to something, and I think people see a festival as a celebration, don't they?
Yeah.
So if you called it only a number of guided walks, people go, oh.
Yeah. That sounds nice.
Not terribly exciting.
Yeah. Program.
Well, festival sounds great.
Indeed.
Don't detract from the Still Walking Festival. Let's keep it going.
Yeah.
Let me get you back to the crowdfunding.
Yeah.
Nowadays, people are a bit more familiar with it. It takes a lot of courage and quite a lot of work to put yourself out there and say, look, fund my idea.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I mean, that was to fund the third festival. We had realised by that point that there's a whole slew of interest. So going back to that first festival, I imagined that when I announced the tickets were on sale, that people would buy them, but they'd all be people that I knew. And that they'd be popular, but they wouldn't sell out necessarily. And it would just feel like it was a bit of fun. And at that time I thought, well, I'll just treat it as a pilot, just see how it goes and respond to that rather than become ambitious too early. And I was surprised by how many people actually turned up that I'd never seen before in my life, you know, that there's an entire raft of people who are interested in their city that I didn't know about. And so a lot of the events did sell out very quickly, in fact. So it became obvious that there's this whole level of support for what I was doing, the nature of what I was doing, that could be tapped into. By the arranging the third festival, seen a couple of other festivals doing relatively low level crowdfunding efforts successfully, and it always seemed very exciting to sort of risk that element of your funding on this chance outcome. But once there's something else that you're selling beyond whatever the actual reward for investing in your Kickstarter campaign, whatever you buy into it, there's a sense of supporting your creative community, whatever the cultural investment is, it perhaps even outweighs what you actually get for your money, and people like being part of that. So it just felt like everyone was a winner in that instance. Wow, I was surprised where people invested from when I was doing the Kickstarter. As far away as Texas, we got a chunk of money from someone in Texas who just liked the idea on a global scale. You know, probably never been to Birmingham, but wanted to support what he felt was a good idea. All sorts of people who'd never actually been to any of the events were enlisting and showing support. And yeah, the whole thing just became like a membership.
I remember you offered a map of Birmingham and you were going to put the donor's name on a street.
Right. Yeah, like a little field in the north of Birmingham, an early 18th century map of the city, as it was a town then. And I just altered, you know, Pittman's Field to whatever the name of the investor is, or some of the streets. Well, I kept New Street just as a frame of reference, but some of the minor streets, to put people's surnames or whatever name they chose.
I think that sounds like a really cracking way of doing it, offering them a map of Birmingham.
Yeah.
A time which, you know, is past, but they might be able to explore the city using that map.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And it also functioned as a document, not as a map of the city, because it altered a lot of the names on it, but as a reflection of who was investing in that festival, that event, that month, or you know, that season, at that time. It tends to be a list of culturally proactive people who recognize what the value of doing something like that would be for them, regardless of what material gains they got as a reward. That whole map became a rather splendid means of describing who was active in that sense in the city at that time.
Are you still enjoying being the director? Are you enjoying being the director more than a tour guide creating walks?
Yes, I think so. But the thing is, people still get in touch with me because they want, you know, they recognize that I do something that not that your common kind of guided tour practice. It could be moving away from that position of authority or...
I'm going to say, because the city of Birmingham probably has its own city guides who have to get some kind of accreditation.
There are some blue badge guides. I've always been a little, maybe suspicious is the wrong word to use, but when you're describing a city, you know, over the course of 90 minutes, what a task to try and fit that entire story in. You know, it's a big story for any city.
So what sets your own tours and the Still Walking Festival aside from the City of Birmingham Blue Badge Guide?
It is something to do with heritage. So if you train for your Blue Badge Guide, I think you invest £3,000 of your hard-earned money. Perhaps you've retired or you've been made redundant or some other change in your life has taken place, and you decide to do this. To get the training, you hand over your £3,000. First of all, they have to accept you before you even get on the course. And then you learn a lot of facts about your hometown. You're grilled on the facts. And if you pass the test, that's it. You've got the, and you know, I'm sure there's all sorts of other criteria.
I think you have to learn how to control a coachload of people, which is an awful thing.
People skills and stuff like that. Bottom line is that you're remembering heritage data, local history facts and figures. Whilst that's one way of understanding the past of a city, I think there's so many layers of the city that if people do have any connection with their environment, it's what's happening in their surroundings in a very general sense now, or has been recently, or what they anticipate soon, what their concerns are. For the most part, in terms of people's lives, living their lives, local history is just irrelevant. You know, it's fun to do, but it's a hobby. You know, there's aspects of it that can reveal themselves as being important, you know, in your passage through your city, through your built-up environment. My spin on the guided tour, being a guide at all, it's something like daring to say, look, here's my take on, you know, I live here, I look at this stuff too. This is how I feel about it. This is what concerns me. This is what I've noticed, regarding that as being a viable subject to sell tickets on the back of, and invite like-minded people to come along to either challenge it, to enjoy it, to contradict it, to improve it, you know, to correct some aspects of it, but to, you know, to include their own
or to challenge you.
Yes, indeed, you know, all of that is welcome.
How about this? How about I ask you to recommend a walk or two, which may be one or two of the walks that have been undertaken under the Still Walking Festival umbrella?
I'm very fond of the Moss Tour. So this appeared in the second festival, and it was led by I think recently retired ecologist, and she introduced me to these little field lenses, very cheap things. They only cost about £5 or £10, and they allow a tenfold magnification of just, you know, whatever's beneath the lens, but that might be moss, lichens, any of the things growing in this churchyard would warrant
plenty to choose from here.
Yeah, indeed. And so suddenly you're not looking at the church anymore, you're looking at it as a substrate for an entirely different landscape that is usually invisible to people. So by handing out a little selection of these little lenses to a group of people, first they're very coy, you might even be on your hands and knees in the lawn, in the grass, looking if the guide has told you to do that. But there's this moment where the group realises how exciting that world is, you know, how unusual it is to see all that stuff close up, that they forget about their immediate kind of, you know, how they're going to be perceived by passers-by. And when they realise that they're a part of a group doing all of that, then there's this very quiet concentration, group consolidation.
Camaraderie of
the group. Yeah, indeed, yeah. And it's a totally silent, invisible thing. So but it means that you can get on with entering the, you know, creating some strange behaviour under the guidance of somebody, you know, in this case an authority. And then suddenly something changes in you, in your approach to your environment, I suppose, and you're there very quickly as well.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've been listening to Ben Waddington, founding director of the Still Walking Festival in Birmingham. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Recorded, written and produced by Andrew Stark of Rethinking Cities Limited. Our artwork was created by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music composed by Simon Saunders of EZtronic.